Well, here we are, Chi Alpha. Yeah. So I'm excited. We are going to continue in our series called Unfiltered Snapshots from the Life of David. We've been in this series for the semester, and we've seen David go on some highs and lows. We've seen a raw, emotional look at the life of David, and we've seen parts of David's story that we have related to. We've seen other parts of David's story that we wish we related to, and other parts of David's story that we wish we did not relate to. But what we've seen has been raw, it's been emotional, it's been real, and it's been exciting. And so tonight, as we get started, we're going to be reading in 2 Samuel chapter 6. So you can go ahead and begin to turn that. You don't have to turn that. Yeah, you can turn that now. But let me tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Josh. I am on staff with Chi Alpha. I graduated in 2007 from the University of Virginia. Michelle did too. Oftentimes what I tell people is I double majored in religious studies and history because double majors are like the thing here. I honestly didn't double major in history. I just came really close. It was technically a minor, but they only put one major on your diploma anyway, so prove it. I got to my last semester, and I sat with my advisor. My advisor was Heather Warren. Some of you may know Heather Warren. And I sat there, and we were talking, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm like really close to the second major. And she's like, well, do you need two majors? And I was like, you're right. I absolutely do not need two majors. 12 credits it is. Also, just in case you were wondering, if any of you are sitting here worried tonight thinking, I don't know, grade point average also nowhere on the diploma. The thing is huge. I read it several times. It never appears. Don't even worry about it. Chi Alpha will hire you. This is what happens when Pete's gone. Yeah. You want to know what else what happens when Pete's gone? This face right here. Let me tell you a story about what happened in the office today. This is real. This is raw. I got back from my appointments today. I walked into the office, went down into the problem solver's office, is where Josh and I sit. It's kind of a small office. We call it because we solve problems. You've got them. You just bring them to our office. I sit down, and there's four people in our small office, plus we put a 50-inch TV up, and we're using it as a third monitor right now because Pete's gone. So there's a lot of heat in the office, and so it's like I just walked back. I had maybe more jacket than I needed, but I'm hot. So what do you do when you turn the fan on when you're hot? So I hit the fan button, and upon hitting the fan button, glitter went everywhere. Everywhere. And I was like, oh! Turns out Jenny, who is in the audience tonight. Jenny, where are you? You want to stand up? Jenny, go ahead and stand up. Yeah, let's see that. Stand up, Jenny. Come on. Yeah, there's Jenny right there. It turns out Jenny had gotten into my office sometime last week, I guess. I don't know at this point when it happened. I was so distraught and had so much glitter. And she climbed up and put glitter on top of every single fan blade. So Fairchild, myself, Kara, and Kathy were, and all our stuff was covered in glitter. So I still have some on me, and so that's why I'm sparkling tonight. So. One more story. Well, I got a couple more stories, but let me tell you one more. I have kids that are smarter than your kids. Because you guys don't have kids. But tonight, I went home before I came here. I was going to eat dinner, but then I decided I didn't really want to eat dinner. And so I went home, and I'm playing with my kids, and my wife put her iPhone down, and so she has a new operating system, so everything has a passcode. And so my three-year-old daughter walks up to her iPhone, picks it up, and then starts playing a game. And my wife said, Emma, how did you get into my phone? She said, I know your passcode, Mommy. My daughter is 3. And Katie said, no, you don't. She said, it's 5968, Mommy. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what to say. Maybe you should just preach tonight. You're smarter than I am. Let me tell you a couple more stories about myself here. Here's what I know about myself. I just want to talk about myself. It's stand-up comedy hour. Here's what I know. I find myself going through my life and realizing that I'm not picking up on everything that's going on around me. I've been around something for so long that I just kind of lose sight of it. And so I got a picture to show you. It's a camera. Yeah, so you see this? This is a picture of the rotunda. And do you guys know anything? Notice anything about those leaves? They're like yellow. Yeah, I had to Google search this. That actually does happen in Virginia in the fall. The leaves change colors. So last weekend, I'm riding the car with Mike and Cindy Williams, and we're riding up and down 29, picking them up from the hotel, and they're like, oh my gosh, the leaves are so beautiful. And I was like, what? They're like, they are changing colors. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess so. Honestly, I hadn't noticed. Sorry. And then I was like, man, that's a bummer. I've been in Virginia my whole life and just kind of missed that. Guess I just gotten too familiar with what was happening. And then I thought back to when Eric Mingle was here. You guys remember Eric Mingle from the fall retreat? Yeah. Eric stayed at my house, well, the house I'm staying in, for a couple nights. And as we were driving around through Virginia, he's like, man, are those mountains over there? And I'm like, where? He's like, right, yeah, those are mountains. He's like, man, we don't have those in Texas. I'm like, well, you don't have a lot of things in Texas. But I was like, yeah, they are there. They've been there the whole time. I don't think anybody just put them there. But I missed them. Whoops. Then this past weekend, maybe the weekend before, I don't really remember, I was in Williamsburg. We had some friends' parents who were up visiting from Orlando. Yes, my wife and kids and I went and hung out with some friends' parents. That's just what old people do. So we're hanging out in Williamsburg. We're like, why are you guys in Williamsburg? You're from Orlando. Isn't that where you're supposed to vacation? They're like, no, we're up here for all the historic sites. Oh, yeah. I was a history major, remember? I'm like, oh, yeah. She's like, haven't you been to all of them? And I was like, maybe in like the third grade. But I should take my kids when they get in third grade to all these historic sites that you're up visiting. But I had just been surrounded by them for so long, I just forgotten they were even there. Have you ever experienced any of these things? Yeah. Let me ask you this question one step further. Have you ever experienced this in your walk with God? Have you ever felt like you're at the place where you got too comfortable with your surroundings? Things felt like they got too easy? Or you felt like you knew what was happening or what was going to happen? Your response to Jesus has changed. Your response to him has dwindled over time. And now it's just kind of the thing that's there. I remember being a first year, my story much like Eric's, and I remember showing up and being involved in Chi Alpha and everything becoming new. I remember the first time I had a real relationship with Jesus Christ. He was a person I knew. He's a person I could feel. He's a person that was there. And I remember everything being so exciting and being on like the adventure of a lifetime and feeling I had to talk a million miles a minute and read everything and talk to everyone and be knee-deep in community at all times. I remember I had a friend, his name was Jordan. He was a pastor's kid. We call him PKs in the biz. And Jordan and I buddied up. He was like really tall and gangly, and I weighed like 105 pounds when I showed up, dripping wet. And so we were kind of polar opposites in stature, but there he was, and he's like, man. He said, I just love being around people like you. And I'm like, people like me? What does that mean? And he's like, everything is so new for you. He said, I've been doing church. I've known Jesus for so long that sometimes I lose the luster of what's happening. He said, and so to be around somebody like you has really helped me. It helps me to go further in my relationship with Christ because I can relate to the time when I remember that was. I thought, man, I need to get myself some of that. And here's what I love about our passage tonight. We're going to see in our passage tonight that's a principle that David could have used. We see in our passage tonight that David misses this. Things get familiar. We see in our passage tonight that David and his men miss this. Last time we picked up in the Unfiltered series, David was not yet king. Tonight when we read, David will be king. I'll kind of catch you up on the backstory of what's happened since we left David. So last time we left David, David's in the cave. David's cutting off the robe and, you know, the number two again. And then Saul tries to kill David. Well, that happens a couple more times, which is kind of crazy. David keeps showing up and Saul keeps throwing spears at him to the point to where Matthew Fehrenkrug said in court group this past week, they should have just stopped giving Saul spears. And so that happens, and then finally David becomes king. David becomes king over all of Israel. At 37 years of age, he becomes the king that God had promised him as a teenager. He sees the promise fulfilled of all those years wandering, all those years running, all those years fighting. Finally, at the age of 37, David becomes king over all of Israel. We're going to pick up in our passage tonight that David is about to bring the Ark of God into the holy city of Jerusalem. He is about to bring the Ark of God into the most important city in the biblical narrative. The Ark of God was the representation of God's rule, of his reign, his authority. The Ark is holy. The Ark is where God dwelled. In our parallel passage in 1 Chronicles 13, we see that David is bringing the Ark to Jerusalem because Saul did not inquire of the Lord. And David wants to be a king that inquires of the Lord. We see as we start off our passage tonight that David is a king who serves under another king, Yahweh. David is a king who knows God. And so we're going to read and see what happens as David brings the ark in 2 Samuel chapter 6. It's on page 302 in my Bible. NIV thin line, what? It says, David again brought together all of the able young men of Israel, 30,000 of them. He and all his men went to Bala in Judah to bring up from there the Ark of God, which is called by the name of the Lord Almighty, who is enthroned between the cherubim on the ark. They set the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the Ark of God on it, and Ahio was walking in front of it. David and all of Israel were celebrating with all their might before the Lord with castanets, harps, lyres, timbrels, sistrums, and cymbals. I have no idea what any of those things are, but I bet it sounded loud. We see in our passage the narrator is going out of his way to give us a lot of detail about what is going on here. Whenever you read a narrative passage in the Old Testament and the New Testament, and the narrator goes out of his way to give you a lot of details, watch out. Let's read on. In verse 6. When they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out and took hold of the Ark of God because the oxen had stumbled. So the oxen is walking and he hits a hole in the road or trips over his own 2 feet, which I so often do. And he stumbles, and the Ark of God is about to fall off the cart, and Uzzah reaches out to grab it. The Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of his irreverent act. Therefore, God struck him down, and he died there beside the Ark of God. Wait, what? The Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of his irreverent act. Therefore, God struck him down, and he died. Wait, the ark was going to fall. The cart hit a hole. The oxen stumbled. It was going to fall off the cart. I don't understand. When I read this passage, I get confused. I get frustrated. Maybe you relate to that. You wonder, why is this happening? He was trying to save the Ark of God. As we read on, we realize that David had the same response. It says, then David... Reading in verse 8, then David was angry because of the Lord's wrath had broken out against Uzzah, and to this day that place is called Perez Uzzah, which the bottom it says it means outbreak against Uzzah. David was afraid of the Lord that day and said, "How can the ark of the Lord ever come to me?" He was not willing to take the ark of the Lord to be with him in the city of David. Instead, he took it to the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. The ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite for 3 months, and the Lord blessed him and his entire household. David was angry. David was mad at God. "God, how can this happen? How could you let this happen? All he did was reach out to grab it. I don't understand. Forget it. I'm just going to leave the thing here." We realize that that's what David does. He leaves it there for 3 months. And we see that the ark blesses the house of Obed-Edom and everyone that was in it. And then our passage continues as we get down and further. The next thing we read is that David is now bringing the ark into Jerusalem again. I'm like, wait a minute. What has changed this time? Why is David doing this now? Why the change in heart? What is David understanding now that he didn't understand then? And again, our parallel passage in 1 Chronicles 15:2 tells us, which I think I have behind me, but in 1 Chronicles 15:2, "Then David said, 'No one but the Levites may carry the ark of God, because the Lord chose them to carry the ark of the Lord and to minister before him forever.'" It turns out that the Israelites and David had gotten too familiar with God. It turns out that the Israelites and David had gotten too familiar with God and had forgotten who he was. He had been around them for so long. He had been near them for so long. He had sustained them for so long that they lost the full picture of his beauty. They lost the full picture of his wonder. They lost the full picture of his holiness. And instead of carrying the ark as they were instructed to do, they were carrying the ark like the pagans had before them. You see, earlier in the biblical narrative, what we saw was the Philistines had won a victory against Israel, and they had gotten control of the ark. And as they took the ark of God with them to the Philistine country, what happened was God gave them boils and disease, and they were like, "We have to get this thing away from us." And so you know what they did? They put the ark of God on a cart. They let oxen carry it back to the Israelites. And now we see that this is exactly what the king of Israel, as he brings the ark of God into the holy city of Jerusalem, is doing. And it's not that David was that far off course. I mean, at least they had a new cart, right? But it was that David and his men had gotten too familiar with the God of Israel, too familiar with the God that is holy. And because of that irreverent act, Uzzah died. So let's continue in our passage and see what happens this time. Picking up in verse 12, it says, "Now King David was told, 'The Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and everything he has because of the ark of God.' So David went up to bring the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. When those who were carrying the ark of the Lord had taken 6 steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. Wearing a linen ephod, David was dancing before the Lord with all his might, while he and all of Israel were bringing up the ark of the Lord with shouts and the sounds of trumpets." There's dancing, there's joy, there's worship. But there's something different this time. Not only are the Levites the one that are carrying the ark in, but their sacrifice. We see that every 6 steps that the ark takes, David sacrifices. It's as if David is looking at this whole situation and saying, "My bad, this is you, God. You are the one that has done this. You are the one that sustained me in the wilderness. You are the one that has anointed me king of Israel. You are the king, and I am just a king under the king. It is because of you, God, you, the God who is." And as I see this picture of sacrifice, I can't but help but think of the gospel. I can't help but think of the sacrifice that was given for us. I can't help but think of Christ, who was the ultimate sacrifice, who was able to give us the ability to dance, to have joy, to know the God who is, that we as children of the new covenant can enter into this relationship with Jesus that Eric talked about, that I have talked about, because of his sacrifice. And as I think about that picture, to see them coming in, this time with the Ark of God, and dancing and sacrifice and trumpets and shouting, I think, man, what a day to be in Israel that would have been. How cool would it have been to be there? The Ark of God, the name of God, where God dwelled, is coming into the most important city in the biblical narrative. Man, that would be a day that I'd like to like play back. Surely everyone must have felt that way, right? Wrong. We see not everyone felt that way. Let's read in verse 16. As the ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul. Yes, that's interesting. Michal, daughter of Saul. It's the first time I realized that rhymed. Not in the notes. But what else is interesting is Michal is David's wife. She is not just a daughter of Saul. In our passage tonight, she is not called David's wife. She's called the daughter of Saul. Because as we'll see as the story unfolds, Michal relates to the old way of doing things. She holds on to the lineage of her father, Saul, instead of embracing what David is embracing here. So let's read on and see what happens. So Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window. And when she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. They brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings before the Lord. After he had finished sacrificing the burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord Almighty. Then he gave a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, and a cake of raisins to each person. And the whole crowd of Israelites, both men and women, and all people went to their homes. When David returned home to bless his household, Michal, daughter of Saul, again, came out to meet him and said, "How the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, going around half naked in full view of the slave girls of his servants as any vulgar fellow would." And David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord who chose me rather than your father or anyone from his house when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people Israel. I will celebrate before the Lord. I will become even more undignified than this, and I will be humiliated in my own eyes, but by these slave girls you spoke of, I will be held in honor." And our passage ends tonight, and Michal, daughter of Saul, had no children to the day of her death, thus fulfilling the end of Saul's lineage, just as the Lord had promised. We see that everyone in Israel was excited about what was happening, but Michal couldn't believe it. She could not have been more upset with the king. How he has distinguished himself. How dare he? David, can you imagine what they thought of you and what they thought of me when you were acting like that? I can't believe you did that to our family. I can't believe you did that to my reputation. It didn't matter what the celebration was about. It didn't matter that the Ark of God was coming. It didn't matter the Ark of God, where God dwelled, was coming into the city. It didn't matter. All that matters is I'm trying to save face. I'm trying to be a queen here. Do you know what it's like? I don't care who you were dancing before. You embarrassed me. She didn't care. She didn't care who David was worshiping. She just cared what others thought of her. I get so mad at Michal in this story. How dare you? What are you thinking? And I just think back to last week in my office. I remember being in a... I don't know. I was reading something. I don't really remember what it was right now. But I felt God's presence in a way that I don't feel often, but I feel sometimes. I found myself in this beautiful moment of worship in the middle of my office, which I already told you is a small office, and there are windows everywhere, windows out into the front room, I don't know if Fairchild was there or not. I was just deep in a moment with God, and I found myself like raising my hands and getting ready to pray out loud to the God who is, to the God who was with me in that moment. And then I found myself come out of it because I was like, whoa, there's people out in that room. I'm not doing that right now. What will the interns think of me? They won't pay attention to my class next week if I do that. Like, I'm just some sort of emotional mess. You ever been there? You ever been there to Monday Night Live? Where you're like, you found yourself like really into a song of worship, and you're like, I'm really going to go for it, and your hand, and then you're like, oh. I don't want my core group to see that. I don't want that girl three rows back to see that. It's because I used to sit in your seat. That's why I'm reading your mail, because I was there. And I wonder why. Why do I do that? Why do we do that? I speak for myself. Why do I do that? Why do I find myself relating to McCall in this story? Is it because I'm like David and the Israelites at the beginning of the story? Because I don't quite know who God is, because I haven't quite fully understood, or because I've gotten too familiar with him? And that has caused me not to worship, but that has caused me to just kind of go with the rote things that were happening. We see that David and McCall both know why Uzzah was struck down. No doubt they talked about it when David went back home that night, somewhere in that 3 months. No doubt in my mind that she knew what had happened. But she doesn't respond in worship. But we see that David responds in worship because he knows who God is. That is the result of what happens in the first part of our story. We see that David and his men maybe got too comfortable, maybe didn't quite understand, or maybe didn't have the full picture of God. Then they remedy that, and that causes them to worship. That causes David to worship in an undignified way, that he would dance naked before the Lord, to dance even more undignified, to do whatever he had to do to talk to the God who is holy, the God who is worthy, the God who was, who is, and who is to come. The Alpha, the Omega, the beginning, the end. The God that is near, the God that is there, the God that it sustains, the God that it transforms, that gives life, that gives joy, that gives peace. And David said, I must respond in worship. I have nothing else to give, but I will give my worship. I will give it all. I think, man, I want that. That's what I want for my life. And so what we're going to do tonight is we're going to respond in worship. So you may have felt like at the beginning, singing two songs felt a little stark. You're like, whoa, I was just getting into that. That was kind of a whiplash. Well, that's because there's more. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to respond in worship. We're going to close with two, three, four songs, probably three. I'm so proud of myself. I really thought that I had jokes in there that you guys weren't going to laugh at, that I was going to be like, you should have laughed. That was a joke. Because when I say that, you guys laugh, and I appreciate that. Here's what I'll say. We're going to respond in worship to the God who is. As you sit here tonight, as you stand here tonight, as you're here tonight, I'm going to invite you to maybe worship in a way you haven't before. One of the things we say in Chi Alpha, which we say somewhat often, is that we believe that our bodies engaging in worship matter. That as our bodies engage in worship, as our hands, as clapping, as dancing, as whatever it would be, that is an outward sign of an inward belief of what is happening in our hearts. That as we can kind of line the two up, that communicates something. So I want to invite you to do that tonight. Maybe you never raised your hands in worship before, but maybe as you think about the God who is, this God who is there for David, this God that caused David to worship, that you would do that, that maybe you would raise your hands for the first time. Maybe you'd come out in the aisle for the first time. Maybe you would clap for the first time. I remember coming here as a Southern Baptist student. I grew up on the red hymnal, so I had never clapped and sang at the same time, and to this day, I still can't do it. So I only do one or the other, or I typically just try to raise my hands, because it's like, that's easy to do. And so I invite you to try some of that tonight, to respond in worship with your body. And there's some of you tonight that you're here. As we talk about responding to this God who is, we talk about responding to Jesus, as we talk about responding to the God who is there for David, who is here for us today, and you're like, I can't respond in worship because I don't know him. I've never known him. I don't know him. And so what I'd ask you to do is just pray. Like, wait, I don't know him. I don't pray to him. I'd ask you to try. Your core group leaders are beside you. The person that brought you here is beside you. Staff are scattered throughout the room. We would love to pray with you. We would love to talk with you about this God who is. This God who was there, who is there, who will be there. This God who is worthy of worship. So I'm going to go ahead and call the band up. And here's what I'll say. I really don't want this message to end here tonight. I don't want this message, I don't want the application of the message to be just that you all raise your hands and then we all go home. But just as I said, that we believe that to raise our hands in worship, to engage our bodies in worship is an outward sign of what's going on inwardly, I believe that tonight, that as we raise our hands in worship, as we engage our bodies in worship, that can be but the first fruits of a life that is lived in worship. A life that is lived in worship to the God who is worthy, because God is worthy. He is the God that is there. He is the God that is near. He is the God of comfort, of joy, of peace, of love. And he wants to be worshiped. He wants to invite us into his presence to worship him. So as you go throughout your week, as you go throughout your core group, as you go throughout your semester, your years, your decades, that you would live a life of worship. A life that worships God rightly, the God who is, the God who is holy. So would you stand with me? I'm going to pray to kind of enter in our time of worship. God, we thank you that you are here. God, we thank you that you are the God that is near. And God, we thank you that you are the God that is holy. That as we worship you in spirit and truth, that you are the God who is worthy of worship. That you are the God that is worthy of worship. That as David worshiped before you, he knew that you were the God that has sustained him through the desert. That you were the God that had anointed him the king of Israel. And that you were the God that was faithful, that you came through on your promises. And so as we stand here tonight as your children, as your people, God, we pray that we would find you worthy, that we would find you holy, and that would cause us to worship. So God, we just pray that you would be here with us tonight, that you would inhabit the praises of your people, that you would dwell among us, God, and that we would worship you because you are worthy. So God, we thank you for the privilege it is to worship you and for the joy that it is to be yours. Amen.